Okay, so thank you so much for talking with me. I just wanted to, I can give you a rundown of basically what this article is about and kind of what kind of questions I have for you, if that's okay with you.
Sure, yeah, no problem. You could just tell me what the article is about and then jump into the questions.
Okay, perfect. So this article is basically the rise of Indian Americans in American politics. And the reason it's obviously so topical now is with the rise of Kamala Harris to the vice presidential nomination and like a new limelight on Indian American politicians, especially young leaders in the progressive movement in the wake of like established leaders like Pramila Jayapal or Ro Khanna. So kind of what I wanted to cover is who you are, what kind of drives you, how you got here, and as well as like Indian societal pressures and pressures in representation and the problems in representation currently.
Sure.
Okay, so I just wanted to know, how did you get to becoming the editor at Jacobin, and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, I started Jacobin when I was in college, between my sophomore and junior year of college. I'd already been a socialist since I was a teenager. I was involved in the Young Democratic Socialists, the youth branch of the Democratic Socialists of America. And other kind of various activist efforts, and I had an intellectual interest in socialism and in Marxism, and that was my background. My parents had immigrated to the U.S. in '88. I was born in '89. My family actually immigrated from Trinidad. My mom is Indo-Trinidadian, so her ancestors, left mostly North India, I think Punjab and Bhojpur district, which is like today in BR, in the 1800s to be indentured servants in Trinidad. So right now Trinidad along with Guyana has the largest Indian population in the Caribbean. I think in both places there are polarities of the population. My dad is from India directly. He's from the south, from Andhra Pradesh, and he just moved to Trinidad for work in the 1980s. He was in Jamaica first, and then a few of the other islands, and ended up in Trinidad, and he met my mom, which is pretty unusual. It's kind of like a someone born in Paris moving to Montreal and marrying into a French Canadian family. Like it's like basically Indian immigration to Trinidad more or less stopped in the 1910s when they got rid of indentured servitude, or 1920s or whatever it was. My family background was pretty modest. My dad was basically a declassed professional in the U.S. and my mom just had kind of the equivalent of a high school degree. So she was working as a telemarketer and had a few other jobs. So I saw from a very young age, as the kind of youngest of five, how much of a difference the welfare state kind of made. So I had access to very good public schools. I was kind of put on the track where I could go to university and things like that, which, I definitely didn't take for granted. And I saw as the product of good social programs and the good things that a state and a functioning kind of society can do. And that was kind of the basics of my.
Sorry.
It's kind of the basics of my family background and how I got interested in politics. And obviously, with not a lot of background, I launched the magazine when I was in undergrad.
Yeah, so I guess another question kind of relating to this is a lot of, traditional Indian immigrant families are almost conservative, with the rise of the right in India itself. Would you say that that had any type of impact on your lean towards socialism, or was it because of, like you said, the social welfare state that you were very much more into it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say my family's politics are just broadly center left and have been for on both sides of the family and across generations. There's definitely not, they're not on the the far left, but my father in India was a Congress Party supporter during kind of the heyday of the Congress Party. So he was definitely a Nehruvian of some type, which I think a lot of his generation was. So even though he's from a Hindu family, I think he is very staunchly anti-communalist. In the kind of old school, like maybe center left kind of nationalist way, which obviously had its flaws, but in comparison is like just very different than what's emerging now under Modi. And from my mom's background, there is kind of again center left kind of agricultural laborers, like a lot of the Indians of Trinidad come from that sort of background. So again, to the extent there's a problem with communalism in Trinidad, historically it's been between the Indo and Afro Trinidadian communities, and a little bit less so as far as like Muslim or Christian and the Hindu community. So I would say broadly, my parents were in favor of politicians who were, just in a broad sense, redistributive. Be it, even my mom, as someone who grew up in the Caribbean, had fond feelings for, Castro even, but, they liked Bill Clinton, they liked Barack Obama, they liked, just basically any center-left politician around the world. So it definitely wasn't a difficulty there. Then beyond that too, my father was kind of deprofessionalized when he came to the U.S., at least for a little while, but his background when he was in Trinidad, he was a medical doctor. But I think that in general, my parents always appreciated kind of cultural cachet more than just kind of any particular narrow profession. So in that respect, like kind of typical, a typical liberal outlook on the world, with the, one exception that obviously, there's certain things that in the household that are just kind of more disciplined than probably in among my white peers, like just kind of how you interact with your parents. And like, I still to this day don't eat beef, even though I've been an atheist in a second, just because, my parents don't do it. And, if it's the one thing they ask or the one thing they do, I might as well not. And again, just kind of, so I think, in other words, there's aspects of our culture that are kind of remnants, like feudal remnants, that I don't think are necessarily the worst things in the world, that we have to separate between the bad parts of it, the reactionary parts that, be it, in India, it's not a problem in Trinidad, but in India, kind of casteism or sexism or other kind of Islamophobia and other things that might exist, with I think the more benign set of customs and deference to elders and things like that I think are not necessarily reactionary. They're just a product of being from poorer countries where a large extended family and the community you have is really the social security system. It's a major part of life. And it wasn't so long ago that my ancestors on both sides lived off the land, and obviously you have large extended families and different structures and whatnot. So I definitely wouldn't say that my background was particularly Western in the sense of like family structure or whatnot. I also have a very large extended family that was always around and things like that. But it was in terms of my parents' generally liberal outlook. Like I remember from a fairly young age, my father being in favor of, gay civil partnerships and later marriage and things like that. And just, so I definitely benefited from having center left parents. So I never felt like I had to rebel against them to pursue politics of the left or whatever.
Absolutely. So there's not much pushback against like typical careers like in IT or doctor or lawyer, but it was much more accepted.
Yeah, yeah, and if anything, I think probably there was a preference towards like culture and the arts and things like that. So,
I guess kind of moving from this is, what would you say about the representation of South Asians in American politics? Because while there are obviously more coming up now, it's still clearly not enough South Asians in American politics, even though we make up such a huge part of the American population. So what would you say about representation in general in politics?
I wouldn't actually say we're underrepresented. I think we're probably overrepresented, maybe on a national stage, but underrepresented in certain areas, like probably New Jersey, should have more, and Queens should have more South Asian politicians, and the local machines might not be there. But I would say this: it's difficult because on the one hand, you want to create broader communities because in those broad communities you can find solidarity. So you want in other words, so there's that nice thing about the South Asian identity in that it does unite South Asian Muslims and South Asian Hindus under the same kind of umbrella and, of a shared customs and cuisine and, lots of million other things. Our family life, which is quite similar often. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it does elide certain differences. So, in general, when you start thinking in terms of communities, you start thinking in terms of, okay, if there's a community, there must be a community leader. And you try it, and what it does, it dissolves difference within the community. So not just obviously the difference between the fact that, there's a huge Bangladeshi population in particular that's, much more working class than, let's say, the first generation of Indian immigrants, or, not to, stereotype, but demographically it's true, the first generation of Gujarati immigrants who moved to the U.S. are doing, quite well materially compared to, recent generations of, let's say, people from Bangladesh and elsewhere who have moved and are just struggling to establish themselves in the U.S.
Right.
But more importantly, between people who own businesses and people who have to work for them. So it seems to me that obviously, there's. I'm not opposed to I occasionally go for pujas and whatnot to a temple in Queens, but I'm not opposed to building kind of those civic structures and institutions, but we actually want a situation where your average South Asian worker feels comfortable and incorporated in a trade union movement, let's say, to resolve their grievances instead of necessarily through a system of patronage through the people who South Asian society that runs a temple and local charities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's an identity that we, obviously has some cultural value, but we don't necessarily want, or at least I don't necessarily want representation for the identity as such.
Right.
I want a situation in which the average South Asian can find a decent unionized job, knows that they can rely on something like Medicare for All, knows that there could be a safe environment for their children, know that they won't face discrimination and racism. So, in other words, I think the solution to those problems come from wider universal politics.
Mm-hmm.
And often we get stuck in the trap of thinking about the U.S. and what we want from U.S. politics is essentially like a multicultural alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think multiculturalism in itself implies that there's a fundamental difference between people in the U.S. that I don't think are always always there. And I think one of the advantages of I think being South Asian in the U.S. is that unlike in other areas, in other parts of the world, we've been able to by and large get access to citizenship and get access to the other things that allow us to live life as ordinary Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to do that without losing what's distinct about our heritage and background. And I think the goal is just to allow more South Asians to do that, mm-hmm. rather than to, I think, look for you know, the validation that comes from having figures that might look like us. Right. And I think obviously, I think Harris is going to be, you know, Harris is someone I disagree with a lot politically, but and I actually find to be, you know, I obviously the way she talks about her mother, her background or whatnot, mm-hmm. it's hard not to relate and sympathize. I think she does a great job talking about her, her background. But yeah, at the national level, Indian Americans are not a particularly significant group, but like that doesn't really, matter to me, the mm-hmm. representation, as long as people aren't being left behind. And it does seem like there are whole swaths of Indian Americans, just like whole swaths of workers of other races in the U.S. who are often left behind and neglected. But one yeah. simple way that I put it is, like, if you were a, like, poor white guy living in rural Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and I were to tell you, yeah, I know your life is tough, but guess what? We're about to elect another white president of Yale mm-hmm. or Harvard.
Right.
Like, it would just be an absurd, like, what does that have to do with me?
Right.
And I think we should kind of treat it the same, that there's, like, Bobby Jindal is the governor of Louisiana, whatever, mm-hmm. Whatever else.
Right, so it's more like assimilation and kind of like representation of everyone, as opposed to being elected solely because they're South Asian and can represent everyone, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think people have the right to preserve and keep whatever they want of their own culture, and obviously then also build their own, you know, unique culture. And obviously, I think there's a unique Indian American culture that's developing, mm-hmm. Where. I can't think of any examples, but I mean, I think all of us, we steal a lot from like Punjabi stuff, right. you know, even though it's like not anything our ancestors done, and we have like the like Rajasthani style weddings, even though mm-hmm. like that's again nothing that like most likely our ancestors have ever done and things mm-hmm. like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a distinct cultures. In other words, I don't want homogeneity, but no one, but just life isn't that way. There's not going to be homogeneity, but I don't think we necessarily need to fight for something in particular, because if you fight for the identity in particular and rights for the community as the community, mm-hmm. then what you end up doing is just really boosting the position of a few self-appointed community leaders.
Right.
And of course, it's a nice thing if a kid looks at like Sanjay Gupta mm-hmm. or M. Night Shyamalan or mm-hmm. Kamala Harris and is like inspired by them. I think that's a nice thing, mm-hmm. but they're not claiming, in a good way, they're not claiming to lead kind of a community. And I'm worried about just veering towards like a European-style multiculturalism where it's reinforced that we're not Americans. Mm-hmm. And it's also, and we're also doing a bit of that self-reinforcing. Like, I think there's nothing wrong with being an unhyphenated American, and you could do that and still be... you know, still embrace what's distinct and unique about your background.
Mm-hmm. And then while we're talking about Harris and all representation and things like that, I was wondering how you felt about Harris's nomination being perceived as, you know, tokenism, as she's a POC woman in politics.
Well, I mean, she's qualified. I mean, I mm-hmm. do think it was like, I think the fact that, I think Biden shouldn't have said ahead of time that he was right. just going yeah. to select a woman vice president. Mm-hmm. I think that made it smack of a bit of tokenism when it seemed obvious to me that there were many qualified women just based on who was in the Democratic field. Mm-hmm. And again, I didn't like many of these candidates, but the field was pretty diverse and they're mm-hmm. obviously all qualified, you know, from, mm-hmm. You know, short of like, I guess, Mayor Pete and Andrew Yang, like everyone like, in that field seemed like they had the background to run the country. And certainly even, Andrew Yang and Mayor Pete had a better background than Trump did. Mm-hmm. I think she's a perfectly qualified candidate. I think, you know, what the good part of what they're doing is obviously acknowledging the Democratic Party is going to be elected on the basis of, in particular, votes from women. And if there's qualified women, you know, why not, like, commit to, or why not try to have a VP and nomination of women in leadership? Like, I have no particular problem with that. I don't think it'll solve any problems for working class women in and of itself, but I certainly don't think it's a bad thing. And I certainly, obviously, I'm a human being, so if someone's inspired, you know, for young girls inspired by having a female vice president, I'm not going to say don't be inspired by it. I don't think it's just tokenism. And, you know, also, I do think that people are sophisticated enough that they're not going to vote on just those glib levels. Like, people in general, I think, are voting for many of the same things. Like, they're concerned about jobs, they're concerned about their healthcare, they're concerned about security, they're concerned about the environment. You know, we're all fundamentally concerned with many of the same things, and I don't think people are going to be bamboozled by just, you know, what a candidate looks like.
Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I think that's all of my questions. I really appreciate this.
Of course. No problem. Good luck with the story. And if you want me to, if you have any doubts about any quotes or anything like that, and you want me to verify a quote, you can just shoot it to me over email and I can get back to you within a few hours.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right.
I apologize again.
No, don't worry. All right.
Thank you. Bye.